Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, second generation and president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by Christy Nitchell, CEO and president of Nitchell Logistics, one of the leading women-owned third-party logistics providers in the U.S. Christy has spent 28 years in the business, starting at the very bottom and working her way through every part of the company, finance, claims, HR operations, before stepping into the top leadership role. Under her leadership, Nitchell Logistics has grown substantially. Today, with about 50 employees, Nitchell specializes in intermodal shipping and serves as one of only 17 companies nationwide with direct railroad contracts. Christy has also made history as the first woman to lead a company in this specialized niche while navigating the challenges and opportunities of running a family-owned business. Christy, welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thank you for having me today.
Great to have you. So let's start with your story, Christy. What led you to join the family business at age 19? And what do you remember most about those early years?
Yeah, I would say what led me to join, I think, was just the fact I went and talked to my dad about buying a pizza shop that I was managing. Actually, another shop I was working at too at the same time, but the gentleman wanted to sell it, wanted to get out. And I thought that this would be a great investment for me at the time because I was a hard worker and whatnot. But my dad basically told me he had owned a pizza shop bar back in the day, which I did not know at that time. But he basically said, you're not going to be happy with making the kind of money you're going to make and working nights and weekends. Being an entrepreneurship is also working nights and weekends regardless. But anyways, that convinced me to come work for him. I didn't even really know what he did at the time. But I would say the early days, there was only maybe five or six of us initially that were working there. And it was just very, I would say initially parts of it laid back, but then parts of it very like where my dad was just, he was a hard worker as well. And he demanded a certain amount of work out of someone. One of the things I talk about is his style of leadership, standing behind me, not helping me work, but watching me work to make sure I was doing the right things. And, but I think it helped me also with my work ethic to just keep going, right? Keep doing whatever was necessary. Yeah, I think those first early years, I think, were interesting because I did get to learn quite a bit pretty fast. My dad directed me into all these different directions and I wore many hats and I just did what was necessary to be done. So it was definitely an interesting time.
Understood. I often look back at my early years and I remember when I first had the talk and I decided to come into the business and buy out my dad. I said, I'm going to give this 6 months. And I looked up and a year had passed and I was like, wow, where did that go? And I often tell people that sometimes you find you're in a good place if time seems to fly, you're not watching the clock. Because you're so immersed in, would you say that's true, Christy? If you look back on those early, did it seem like time really accelerated in your first few years there?
Yeah, absolutely. Because even though he said I wouldn't be working nights and weekends, I think initially I wasn't, but probably after that first year I was and having to go in weekends because I was probably working 70 hours a week. Of course, my dad only paid me for the 40. But yeah, it was definitely, the time flew by fast. For sure. And as those years went on, I would say it was probably even the third or fourth years when I was pretty in his face about wanting to leave, to be quite honest.
Really?
Yeah, I gave him my resignation at one point and we talked through some things and I ultimately stayed.
Wow. So what, if you don't mind me asking, what brought it to that point of saying, all right, I can't do this. I got to go.
I think it was just my dad, there was three of us kids. So I'll step back a second. There was three of us that worked for him. And I think my dad was really trying to see who could be like the superstar of us and maybe eventually take over the business, but none of us knew that. But he was really hard on me, really hard. He was a screamer. He did yell quite a bit, especially if there was a mistake. And if you make mistakes, you already feel bad. And I just think the pressure that he put me under was just so much. It's like I'm trying to do the best I can. And it wasn't fun for a while. But I can tell you after that happened, he did calm down and things fell into place a little bit more, but it was still rocky throughout the time. But early on, that's just how it started off.
And you're not alone, by the way. I had a moment where I really felt like the world was upside down, and I stepped away and then came back and said, "All right, I'm coming back, but here's how we're going to roll." And
Yeah. And the interesting thing, I'll throw this in here real quick. Like my dad, not long after we opened Knishel in 2003, now granted, I started working for him in 97, but in 2003, he ended up having a triple bypass and had to have open heart surgery. And that was, I feel like, the true testament of he couldn't be there and I had to take over. And I remember when he came back, he said, "Oh, wow, the business is still here." And I'm like, "Where do you think it was going to go?" I thought that was interesting because I think by that time, then pretty fast, him being tough on me, like it was my opportunity to step up.
And it's almost eerie how our paths are resonating, because for my dad it was a hip replacement.
Ah, nice. That's
And the same
interesting.
thing
Yeah.
happened. So it's interesting. So along the journey, you started out dispatching and you worked your way, it sounds like, through just about every role in the
Yeah.
company. So talk for a minute, Christy, if you would, about how that bottom-up experience shaped maybe how you lead today.
Yeah, absolutely. Coming in, being a dispatcher, which is arranging the freight with the carriers and the railroads initially. And then I think learning all the different areas from finance to claims to booking freight on the over the road side, pricing, even sales. My dad took me on sales trips and talking in front of customers. I think it shaped me into the best well-rounded leader I could be because I understand every aspect and what it takes to do it. And I think it's also helped just with the employees that we have here, the team members, because if they know that I've done that role, I'm not going to expect them to do something I haven't done myself or wouldn't do and sit in that role. And I understand how challenging it is. I would say it's probably more challenging now than it was when I started, but I think it's really made me well-rounded to truly understand business in general and how each piece really comes together.
And I would imagine also just in communicating with the different departments, because you can, in theory, speak their language. You've been there, you've done it,
Right.
and you know what they're dealing with. And also, that doesn't allow them to too easily finesse you, if you would.
No, exactly. I think sometimes in organizations, you have people that are running the company, and I'm not saying this is wrong, but if they haven't worked in those jobs, sometimes there is some kind of resentment or whatever from the employees that tend to feel like you haven't done my job. How do you know the expectations, et cetera? So again, I think that's a pretty powerful thing that I was able to go through so that I do understand, and I do think I get a respect from the team in general because of that.
And it would seem for a lot of our past guests, myself included, not uncommon to start at the bottom and claw your way up and have a very strong personality at the top that's maybe being a little harder on one than they would maybe a non-family member. You had said when we first spoke that your father had great sales acumen, a very strong salesperson, but not always the best business person. Can you talk for that, talk about that for a moment?
Yeah, absolutely. So my dad, like you just mentioned, great in sales. He was able to build a book of business that he spent years on trying to even just get the opportunities. And he was really good at being able to talk to customers and give them solutions to their problems, et cetera. On the business side of things, I think the challenge there was for a long time when it came to the P&L or building a system, like these are things that I don't think he really understood it as well either. So I didn't have access to, say, our P&L for a long time, even though I worked in finance and whatnot, but stuff like that I didn't have any access to, or even just simple things. I think that was challenging as we grew, as you brought in more people. He wanted everyone to not get paid for overtime. And I remember, I'm going to share this comment because I think it's great, but he threatened to fire me if I paid anyone overtime. He would just make everyone a manager. The title so that he didn't have to pay them. But technically, you had to have two people under you and some other rules there to necessarily not get paid overtime. So I'm like, so you're basically asking me to break the law to do this. But again, I think it's just very old school, maybe back in the day, because he just didn't learn and he didn't care. He wanted it his way. And even when it came to certain things with the business and our accountants, just as an example, like he would demand certain things be done a certain way with them, where they had to figure out how do we do this, because he wants to make X amount of money. He's not working anymore, but he wants to get Social Security, like stuff like that, where it was just, you can't just demand that. You have to follow the rules when it comes to the business and whatnot. And I think the other thing is, he didn't really reach out to people to ask for advice, because he just wasn't that guy. Where I think if he would have done that, it probably would have helped him learn a little bit more. But I feel like his shortcomings is where I had to come in and learn and figure that out, so we could truly run the company like a true business and not like a family piggy bank, so to speak. Because a lot of times that's what happens in family business. You want to take care of your family. And that sounds great, but it's not necessarily the best thing to always be doing, is how I at least have learned from what I've seen back in the day as CEO or an owner. Like sometimes you have things that you want to purchase or do, and the bank account for the business becomes your personal checking account and things like that.
Yes, it definitely resonates. We often look at it as the contrast of what we'll call a lifestyle business versus an enterprise.
Yeah.
And it's not what one's wrong or one's right, it's just that they're different.
And back then we were a very small business, so I can understand. But then obviously growing over the years and stuff, I feel like there was a point where that needed to change. And it did change at one point when I got the 51%. So.
So let's talk about that. That was an interesting juncture. So at that point, you did get the 51% in shares, and that opened the door to enable you to become a certified women-owned business, if I'm not mistaken. Talk
Yes.
about that experience, that milestone, how that transpired for a moment, if you would, Christy.
Yeah, so the challenge of keeping money in the company and having a bad year in 2013 had caused me to come up with a solution of, hey, Dad, you gave us all 25%, but if you gave me the 51 total, then we could become woman-owned and have access to gaining other business from the government, potentially companies that are maybe looking at supplier diversity, which back then that really wasn't a thing. I think it was more the government that I was really looking to get into, because you have NASA and FEMA and DOD, like all these different avenues. Didn't know much about it. I just knew it was another avenue we could utilize to try and bring in more business. And I was able to sell my dad on that. But like I said, there was two reasons for that. One was to stop the money from going out of the company, but also how do we get more business to bring in to the business as well?
Cool. And you had touched on this, but let me ask a little bit more on it, because certainly being involved with multiple family members, there's great benefit to that. There's great opportunity, but it can also be a little challenging. Talk about how you've managed working with your brother, who, as I understand, is still involved and active in the company today.
Yeah, I would say working with my brother hasn't been as challenging maybe as some other people have had in their families. For the most part, he's taken over the sales that my dad had initially started the business with, which is a good chunk of business. He also works on the procurement side, but I also have a consultant, a sales consultant that works with him one-on-one that basically keeps him accountable from myself. So I'm checking in with that gentleman. Because it just, I feel like it makes it easier for both of us as even employees in the company, even though we're owners, because I don't want to have someone else here have to be my brother's boss. But this way, it helps him out. It keeps us in a situation where we're not going head to head about things I think he needs to be doing. I talked to the consultant about that, and he pushes that through on that end. And it works out pretty well that way, to be quite honest. I don't want to have any additional family drama in the business, because it had been challenging over the years just having four of us in the business together.
Sure. And I think that was a great move to bring in somebody from the outside. For a number of years, I overlapped with my sister,
Yeah.
and she was, I'm the youngest by 10 years, so she's actually 15 years older than me. And somebody once asked me, how do you navigate a tough conversation with your sister in the business, and my response was very carefully.
Yeah.
Because I'm essentially talking with someone who functioned as something of a young second mom growing up.
Yeah.
So that's a very delicate relationship that I certainly want to honor and respect. But sometimes we did have to have some hard conversations. And I just said, this is my sister first, and I've got to be careful with this one.
Yeah, and I think that's smart because it's tough, right? Because after work, sometimes you have the family gatherings and Christmas and
Yes.
all these things. And the last thing I wanted to do is feel a certain way against anybody in the family. But I will say it was challenging with my brother a little bit before I did bring in the consultant because I did have to be in charge of him, but I really wasn't full time. And I would obviously blame that on myself for not necessarily having that in a better situation back then, but I think I found a good way to have us work together. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to be having difficult conversations at some point as a business continues to change, though.
But you always have that buffer. And so maybe,
Yes, yes.
to the consultant, hey, can you have this conversation about this? Or
Yes.
help us through this conversation, or mediate
Yes.
this conversation, or facilitate it, which is a great, I think, a really smart way forward when it comes to dealing with family, is sometimes being okay with, because a lot of times family businesses tend to be very closed circuit.
Yeah.
And that idea of saying, hey, let's bring somebody in from the outside and get a perspective. And I think that's brilliant. That's
Well, and
great.
the nice thing about it too is he's coaching him too, mentoring him on the sales side of things. So I think it's also helping him in ways, obviously, and keeping him accountable to things and whatnot. But in the same token, it is that buffer that's worked well.
Got it. Switching gears now into more of the business of Kunitral. Right now, intermodal shipping accounts for, I'd say, the dominant portion of your business. And if I'm not mistaken, Kunitral is one of only 17 companies with direct railroad contracts. Is that right?
That is correct for companies that are non-asset based, meaning we don't own our own equipment. But yes, it's a very small niche.
So, just to give our listeners a little bit more color on that, what exactly does that mean from a competitive advantage standpoint to be one of those 17?
I think it's a huge advantage because a lot of companies, and there's, I don't know, probably 30,000 brokers out there in general, but like they can't just go ship rail the way that we do. They'd have to go through someone like us or another provider that's like us to ship their product on the railroad. And even though we don't own our own assets, we have partnerships with our drayage that go back till the day I started 28 years that we've really built that out where these carriers are willing to do a lot for us. Or if they have a box and it's two of us, hopefully they give us that box. And that's what building those relationships about. It's about controlling what we can control when our customer gives us the freight to ship on the railroad. And I just think it's very important because there's billion-dollar companies out there that don't have these railroad contracts that have to go to companies like us and they can't do it themselves. I think it's a very powerful thing that we have these contracts because you can't get them now. You might be able to get a CSX or a Norfolk Southern contract if you're shipping already maybe 1,000 loads a year with them on their product that they have, which is similar to what we do because they have a subsidiary company that does similar to what we do. But most of the time, they're not looking to expand on that contract.
Understood. Understood. So along the way, you've also built out truckload LTL, I think even an agent division. Talk about that for a moment. How do you balance this, like, somewhat diversification of services or solutions while staying true to that intermodal niche, that intermodal core?
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned already, intermodal, it is about 70% of our revenue here. Early on, our intermodal customers wanted us to do truckload and they wanted us to do LTL, and we didn't have those services initially. So we started them from the ground up specifically to service those customers. In the past, we never put a whole lot of time and effort into it, but then it continued to grow and grow. And I would say several years ago, we did try to expand further on our truckload side because truckload is the biggest arena of all the freight that's out there. But there's also a lot of people trying to do the same freight in that
Sure.
market. It's crowded. That's why we're in a market we're in today still, because there's a lot of capacity out there, not enough freight to move for all the companies that are out there too. But I will say, when we got away from the intermodal and tried to build that out some, then the intermodal suffered a little bit, and we were not finding the right solutions to really grow that. So the last, I would say, probably year and a half, we made a decision to now just continue to focus on our niche right now. We will continue to grow the truckload and the LTL in the future. I just think we have to get a couple years ahead of us right now until we really dig deep into those areas. But those are two ways for us to diversify from what we're doing, especially in the markets that we're in. It's very cyclical. And the other part of that is the agent network. So we had agents out there, and that's a person that has their own account of business. They want to run their own freight, but they don't want to be a true business owner. So what that means is they have their business name set up. A lot of them tend to work from home. Some of them have offices, but we're the back office for them. So we're the money, we're the collections, we're the contracts, the systems, all that kind of stuff. And then they can run their business, or they can be a sales agent for us and we run the business for them here in the office. And that's actually brought quite a bit diversity to us this past year. The agent side became pretty hefty within our business, more hefty than you would typically see. But I will say having all those different areas has really helped us as a company not just become more well-rounded, but get through the tough market that we've been in for 2.5 years now in supply chain.
Yeah, and I would say, imagine having some of that diversity keeps you agile as well as resourceful to maybe your core customers that have needs that led you to explore some of these alternate or these complementary solutions, I would say, because they are all
Yes.
complementary.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. So when we spoke before today, you were indicating that the railroad industry seems to be heading into something of a period of change. I wonder if you could talk about that for a moment and how Kinitcho Logistics is preparing for the potential changes ahead.
Yeah, the railroads are very old, been around a very long time. But I think one of the biggest ones, when you look at the way that the railroad moves across the country, if you're moving on the rail, you're taking trucks off the road, and there's a lot of congestion, there's a lot of emissions and whatnot that goes into the air. So shipping rail is definitely more, what should be typically more economically viable for customers. And a lot of the lanes that are 700 miles or over, you usually have a good bit of savings. You could have up to 20% in savings from shipping a truck. But I think the main thing is they're really trying to position themselves to truly take on more of that truck-like business. For them to take more of those trucks off the road, they're going to have to be able to have faster service than some of the service there is today. Some of the service lanes are great, other ones are not. But I think one of the biggest things right now that's on the horizon is the Union Pacific announced doing a merger with the Norfolk Southern Railroad to become the first transcontinental railroad ever. So
Wow.
that would be going from the West Coast to the East Coast. And for people that don't know, you have the BNSF Railroad and the Union Pacific on the West Coast, and you have the Norfolk Southern and the CSX on the East Coast. So it's definitely an interesting time for this merger to come up. I do think because of the Republicans being in office, they would be in more favor for something like this to go through. But there's obviously a lot of steps, and it's probably going to take a couple of years before something like this happens. But the CP and Kansas City Southern a couple of years ago merged from Canada all the way down to Mexico. So you can ship something from Canada, go all through the US down into Mexico, which that didn't exist before either. So I think it's a good thing for the economy and for companies like us because it'll make it more seamless. If you think about it, if we're shipping from west to east, we have to get pricing from the west railroad. If we're shipping east going west, we have to get pricing from the eastern railroad. And the eastern railroads share boxes with the Union Pacific, but their network is just on the east. And a lot of times we talk about them having their boxes on that network. And there can be challenges getting what you need to go across the country for your customers. So we think that this is going to be a really good thing for the customers and the economy. I think it will continue to take more trucks off the road, be able to put some savings in people's pockets and help the air out there from not being so polluted, hopefully.
My goodness, you're definitely broadening the horizons and the understanding of our listeners in terms of how stuff gets from point A to point B, because all we know is it just shows up, but there's a whole world behind it
Yes, and it's
that
very complicated. It's not
you
very simple.
are. That's wild. So let's talk for a moment about AI, because it's permeating just about every industry everywhere, mine certainly, perhaps yours, but talk for a moment. Do you see opportunities, Christy, for AI to play a role in logistics, whether it be operations, customer relationships, or even efficiency? How do you see AI showing up in your world?
Absolutely. It's already been here. The larger companies have already been putting it into play here. I'll give you a few examples of where the efficiency comes from. Whether it's actually, we have an AI company coming in today to talk to us about this, but it's reading emails and being able to respond to customers that can go to your TMS, your transportation management system, gather that information and email it back to the customer without a person touching it. They also have these voice agents that answer the phone and can negotiate with carriers. It sounds crazy, but listening to it, it sounds like a real person negotiating a freight rate. So there's been a lot of companies like C.H. Robinson's, one of the leading companies out there, where they have been able to, unfortunately, it's cutting some jobs, but then eventually you can do a lot more with that technology. And then eventually, not that you won't bring people in, because there people are always going to have to be a part of what we do here. But it's things like that's going to help. Another thing is when you, so delivering freight to stores, a lot of people don't realize a lot of these large customers have their own systems we have to grab appointments from. And there's bots that are actually made to grab them right away, the best appointments. And someone like me might be like, why can't I get this good appointment? Because they've already implemented this technology to grab those appointments and go into these systems and do all that work. So I think the biggest thing is really going to be creating efficiency for the people that we have. So then you don't have to hire as much people down the road. I love employing people, but in the same token, we're not going to make more money if we don't get efficiencies out of this technology. So there's a lot of different areas. We also see a lot of it in the back office as well, grabbing the paperwork, invoicing, and things to that nature to really help speed up that time and take that work off the people that we have.
Nice. Excellent. And it sounds like it's not so much something that's coming. It sounds like it's very much already there, and you're
Yeah.
already very much immersed in what's already at hand. That's
Yeah.
exciting. Going back to your core, intermodal shipping. So Knichel Logistics has certainly carved out a strong reputation there. From a brand perspective, if you could talk for a moment about how do you ensure that the company's brand stays intact or continues to stand out as you diversify, as you face in some of the other channels of service, a more crowded logistics marketplace. How are you going to make sure that the brand continues to stand strong and stand apart from the field of competition?
I think the biggest thing forefront is I'm the brand of the company out there, and I do a lot of speaking events. I do podcasts where I speak on them, like this one, or I have my own podcast, Empowering Women into Logistics. I think being present out there, I can tell you a lot of events I go to, people in the audience will say, how do you get our CEO out there being like that face of the business? Because I do think that's important. That's how we've been able to grow and garner respect and build that brand. But it's also about the people here, the team that we have here, being aligned on the leadership team, making sure we're all going in the same direction, having great people that work for me, taking care of the customers. At the end of the day, we all say we sell customer service. That's all we have is service. We don't own anything, just service. Actually, today is the first day we're deploying new training with a consultant that worked in our industry and built training for a company our size. And she's working with a team member here to truly build out the training, how we talk to our customers and carriers, and how do we treat each other, even to all those aspects. So I think having world-class training is going to be key for us being a step ahead of everyone else and truly saying our customer service is like the best out there and not just saying it.
I love what you just said at the start of that we all own customer service. I think that's really a powerful sentiment and a powerful statement. And in the conviction of your words, I can tell you it wasn't just a punchline. You meant it, and you meant it
Yes.
wholeheartedly.
At the end of the day, service is so important because it could mean even a bad situation turn into a good situation on how you deal with a customer. Something as simple as that, when people are afraid to even face the problem or tell the customer the issue, your load's not going to be delivered today, and that type of thing. So it's key.
Another point you made that I wanted to expound on. You mentioned your podcast, you mentioned it about empowering women in logistics. So in an industry that is still, at least from my perception, still somewhat still dominated by men, what challenges have you faced, Christine? And what advice might you give to other women who are entering leadership roles in either logistics or maybe in family businesses in general?
Yeah, so it's very male dominated, especially in the leadership side of things. I will say there's a lot more women in the industry as a whole now than there was when I started. Probably count on two hands how many women maybe I knew back then, but the challenge is still getting up the ladder. So I think some of the challenges I've had, and I still speak about this on our podcast, men didn't want to talk to me because they thought because I was a woman, I wasn't the manager, and they wanted to talk to the manager. I had a customer that wouldn't even talk to me because they wanted to talk to a male. My father actually fired that customer. So it's stuff like that, or just again, I think some of the challenges of feeling like you don't belong in the room. And one of the things I think that has helped me along the way is I'm in that room, even a railroad meeting to this day. I'm probably like one of two women in a room of 60 to 100 people. Maybe there's a few women from the railroad typically now, which you didn't see in the past, but there's definitely some now. There's a couple actually that are head of the railroad. But with that being said, I always try to be the first one to ask a question, raise my hand. Don't be afraid to voice your opinion. Because I used to feel like I didn't belong here. Some of these people worked with my dad that I'm still going to these meetings with. So I'm pretty young compared to some of the people in that room. And it's not a bad thing. I think it was really like getting the confidence in myself to know that I belong there and not being afraid to speak up. And I think that's the biggest thing is like never stop learning and always speak up because you deserve to be in that room having that conversation just like everybody else. So I think that's really important. And I do think advice all around is ask for help. I think for the longest time, because I couldn't really get anything from my dad, I eventually got him to pay for a consultant that I could work with that could help me coach me, right? What am I supposed to even do? He made me the CEO, but didn't tell me what I'm supposed to do. So reaching out and getting the coaching and the mentoring and asking questions. Like, I think if I look back 20 years ago, I definitely wouldn't have picked up the phone and called another CEO and asked them questions. And today it's all the time. And so many people are out there willing to help. I'm one of those people too. I mentor people, and I think it's so important. And I want to help other people not have to go through those challenges as much as I did because I didn't have anyone to really lean on or help back then.
I think sometimes people that are not in a family or multi-gen business forget that the founder, there was no playbook. There was no guidebook on how to start the business and how to run it and how to take it to the next generation. Nor was there likely a playbook that was dropped in your lap at age 19, Christy, or mine when I was 22. We just had to figure it out. And sometimes people don't realize that's how it is usually. Sometimes there's resources and there's tribal knowledge and there's things that you pick up on, and most certainly we're all influenced by our that previous generation in various ways. But yeah, there's no guidebook, there's no rules of the road, there's no standard operating procedures typically for how to do it. You just figure it out.
That's a good point, I guess, when I talked about my dad, right? Like he's just trying to figure it out, and here I'm like judging him. But at the end of the day, though, I will say though, like I had to push myself out of my comfort zone and get used to being uncomfortable. And I say that today because we've had to get very uncomfortable. And I think that's a good thing, though, because it makes you think differently.
So when you do a look back across the span of your career to date, in this conversation alone, there's been, I'll say, many mo notable milestones. But if you look back, Christy, what's something that's, wow, that was a great moment for me, that it was a great moment for us as a company when you do your look back?
Yeah, there's a lot, but I will say probably the one that stands out the most. To be quite honest, we hit just about that 100 million mark, and we're definitely going to be over that this year. But knowing that I think less than 1% of women-owned companies ever hit that mark, and it's so little that they don't even put the stats out there. There's a list somewhere. But I think of that all the time. Even men-owned companies, like, there's not even that many that can even hit that size of revenue. And I think, I don't know, I just sit back and think, wow, like I just was 19 and started working this job and didn't know that this was going to turn into this business that, like, now look at what it's become and having all these people work for us and really become a force in this industry. I think that's important to me because, again, I think it's important to show everyone, but especially women, if you put your mind to it, you can do it. Like I went to college and I quit. And I know that's a lot of stories of entrepreneurs, but I think it just goes to show if you have the grit and the drive, you can be successful just like anybody else. You don't have to
Absolutely.
have that college degree.
And I think true of your industry, true of every industry, where it's refreshing to see more female faces at the top or in various roles that weren't before. Yesterday, I had the privilege of taking part in a 9/11 stair climb to honor the fallen firefighters. And
Oh.
what was notable as I looked on the wall and they had the faces of all of the fallen, I don't believe there was a single female on the wall. Yet, as I was doing the stair climb with other firefighters, I'd say there were about 20% were women. And in many cases, they were kicking the men's butts and they were in full gear. And I was like,
That's awesome.
go for that, go for yours. And it was really refreshing to see. Not only were they involved, but they were engaged and they were doing it. And I was pretty gassed after 20 intervals of stair climb. And I can't imagine what 50 pounds of gear.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have lasted that long either, but yeah, I
So
agree with you. It's
it was
great.
impressive. We talked about our younger years, but if you were to take yourself back for a moment and knowing that some of our listeners are in those maybe early 20s, maybe late 30s, and they're sitting there wondering, do I join this family business? Do I go my own way? They're at that crossroads. What piece of advice might you give them today, Christy?
I think the biggest thing I brought up about the resignation with my dad, and even having the conversation with him, I remember telling myself, this is going to be something one day, and I just have to deal with this until we get there. I didn't know how long it might take or even what that meant, but I just knew we had something good. And I think it's just don't give up on the journey and take the opportunity and the chance to try it. It's not going to be easy. But in the same token, like I could have given up so long ago, and then I decided to continue to go forward and just fight because it's almost like I had to prove to not just my dad, but myself that I could do it. Because one of the things I didn't talk about was my dad always wanted to hire people with college degrees. And here I am, I don't have one. He doesn't even have one. My brother went to trade school and my sister doesn't have one. So I almost felt, so what does that say? When he brought someone else in the company too, that he paid more than he paid me and I was above this person, and because this guy owned his own company. So I felt like those things also just helped me like push forward. Like I can do this. I'm going to prove to you that I can do this. And even just to myself. Now I really think it's just having the drive and the grit to go through with it because whether you work for a family business or not, it's going to be challenging. And I will say, as tough as it has been, it might be easier working that through with your family than it would be with people you don't really know. And then have a legacy maybe for your family in particular, even if you decide you don't want to continue to pass it on, but just don't give up.
And I think that tenacity is marked by a number of our guests, that there's a intent and intensity and a refusal to quit no matter what,
Yeah.
that marks a lot of the stories we've heard to date. So now looking ahead for a moment at the industry, at Knichel Logistics, what's exciting you right now? What's exciting you about the road ahead?
I will say it's exciting that I have this big goal that I want to hit and get to 300 million revenue. We've been going through a very challenging time in supply chain. So I think maybe what's exciting to me is still trying to find ways to get there. How do we get through this? It makes you think outside the box harder than what you have before. So I am excited for the future and the growth of the company, even though it has been challenging. I think it just pushes you harder to figure it out because I refuse to give up and I refuse to fail. So yeah, I'm excited about that and how we can continue to put our mark on the industry.
Awesome. Set. Last question. If somebody, one of our listeners, wanted to connect with you to learn more about your journey or about Kenicho Logistics, what's the best way for them to connect?
Sure, we are on LinkedIn at Kenicho Logistics, and then we have a website, www.kenichologistics.com. And then, of course, I'm also out there as well. Christy Kenicho on LinkedIn is my main source where you can find me and definitely connect with me. And I'm here to help whoever needs any kind of help or advice.
Awesome. Christy, thank you so much for joining us on Growing Up B2B. Your story certainly highlights the grit, resilience, and innovation required to grow a family business into a nationally recognized leader in logistics. Again, we've been speaking with Christy Kenicho, CEO and President of Kenicho Logistics, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Christy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at delianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.